each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in on Wednesday. Since it's Wednesday, that means I'm Father Tom Coyes. Happy to be with you again. Thank you to
those guys come in all the time, don't they?
Yeah. I'm really grateful that Father Bush lets me bring my crowd.
Yeah.
You know, he has to set up all those chairs and everything around the studio here. But very, very good. I'm very excited and interested today. It's a serious topic. As we always get into serious topics and some brain wrinkling, as it were. We have a special guest, and it was inspired by this guy has a neat blog, and in reaction to one of the troubled things that are going on in our country, the great divide, the great arguments, the great anger, the great split with the racial tensions, especially ignited by the Charlottesville riots in Virginia not long ago. And it's still in my mind. I don't know if it's running. The Texas hurricane has dominated the news in the past couple of days, but this will be coming back. And it's a very topical topic that's not going to go away and that's been around for a long time. And so when I called up my good friend, actually, let's see if I can get him on. Here we go. Let's see. Now I pushed the right button. Hello, this is Father Tom Coyes. I'm looking for Abraham Lincoln. Is Abe around?
Yes, sir. This is Abraham Lincoln.
Excellent. Excellent. You know, the people that listen to this radio show did not know that we have the capability of contacting
direct line
to the wonderful afterlife. As a matter of fact, I'm sorry, Abe, I was trying to get a hold of Ron Santo or Ernie Banks, but I guess you picked up the phone from your heavenly bliss. The guy I'm joking with is a guy by the name of Kevin Wood. Kevin, we've known each other for a couple of years now. You've been to my wonderful little historic parish. I saw on your blog, why don't you tell our radio audience who you are, what you do, and Tony is also here on the radio. I'm Father Tom, who you know. You don't know the other voice here. Tony is always my faithful companion on these Wednesday episodes, as on the other episodes of Winds of Change.
Mic is working.
Yeah, when the mic is working. Yeah, yeah. We are a professional group here. This is a very, it's a beautiful studio, actually. You know, it really is. But anyways, Kevin, give the audience a little bio and an opening statement, shall we say, something like that.
Well, very well. Thank you very much, first of all, for having me on the show. My name is Kevin Wood, and I do portrayals of Abraham Lincoln. By the way, actually, I'm getting a lot of feedback here. Not sure if you can correct that.
Yeah.
I do portrayals of Abraham Lincoln. I do lots of visits to schools, to libraries, to senior homes, I do living history events. I do an occasional party, convention, conference. I even run dressed as Abraham Lincoln. So,
oh, you ran a marathon or a half marathon?
I do running races and even triathlons dressed as Abraham Lincoln. So a little bit of everything, and especially the last few years since I've relocated back to Illinois.
Do you have a guy, Douglas Stephen, racing behind you, trying to chase you, perhaps? A little chubby guy?
I've heard of that being done in some places.
Very good. And those who listen to me know that I find that history very fascinating. The older I get, the more I want to know about what happened before. It makes now come to life, you know. Tony, you wouldn't say you are a history buff.
You know what? In an odd way, I loved history in school, but I'm loving it more now. Wednesday's talking to you.
That's right. We make it exciting, mm-hmm. as it were. And I have to remind our audience, a few years ago, one of the more challenging things that I did as a priest, not just because I dressed up a little bit, I dressed up as a bishop. Kevin, you were there when we did the reenactment. Mr. Woods was Abraham Lincoln, and some people who know St. James of the Sag remember. We had a Civil War reenactment, which I had so much fun promoting because I called it a Civil War reenactment. And, of course, people who know what Civil War reenactments are know that there's a lot of cannons and a lot of gunfire. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, this is going to be a reenactment that is very connected to the Civil War, but no guns, no cannons, just words. And I truly believe that it's only when you get into the words, the ideas, the ideologies, the philosophies, the arguments, that you really begin to understand and learn something from the study of the past, especially the study of wars. One of my main gripes, have you ever had this, Kevin, all the Civil War reenactments that you've been a part of, I'm sure, but have you ever sensed that there's maybe too much interest in the gunpowder and the caliber of the rifles and the kind of food they were eating and not enough attention paid to what the war was all about? Does that make any sense to you?
Well, most certainly. I would agree with that assessment. The emphasis does seem to be, especially on the military side, somewhat on the sort of the civilian life, but not a whole lot of attention given to the, as you titled it, I believe, the ideas behind the bullets. And we forget that there never would have been the Civil War, the military end of things, if there had not been a war of words and a war of ideas raging for decades previous to the actual outbreak of the physical fighting.
And, you know, I think today, it was as we survey the conflict and the sometimes violence, you know, that is possible and it could get worse. I want to raise the flag of saying, let's do our best at keeping our battles word battles first. Let's avoid the guns and let's battle things out in the arena of ideas, as it were, and pray that the best ideas win, as it were.
That would certainly be a more civil battle. We refer to as the Civil War.
Very good. Yeah. Well, Kevin, give you your blog that you the reason I called you because I caught your meditation or commentary, shall we say, on the Charlottesville riots. Here's the white supremacists versus the what's the other side? I could say.
Well, it depends who you ask. Who the other side is? They're either peaceful protesters or they're something more than that.
Yeah. Each side is a complicated group of people. And actually, I think that's one of the very important points we all need to keep in mind. As political groups are, they're often a conglomeration of a number of issues, ideas, values, and they take on power when they're coalesced into what is thought of as the main idea. And
that was certainly the case in the 1850s in this country with the complete upheaval of the political system, even the social system, due to the issue of slavery and other things, and how the rise of the Republican Party, which was in essence a mixture of diverse elements all coming together around a central theme of fighting against the extension of slavery into the territories of the West and eventually into the North.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, Kevin, would you want to start with one of the themes of your blog? As I have a theme that I want to share too and get to, and I think they will come together, but I probably from different angles, as often is the case. So,
okay. Yes, I do a very occasional blog. I publish maybe once a month, and it's just usually when something's happening that seems relevant. And so this was obviously a case. I hadn't thought of writing this article until the events of Charlottesville. But I entitled it Abraham Lincoln, White Supremacist, the question.
What question?
It came up because I was reading some of the articles coming out related to Charlottesville, and some people were making the case that if we go about tearing down all memorials to any people who held white supremacist views, well, we need to go right to the man himself, Abraham Lincoln. And the person cited some statements that Lincoln had made during the Lincoln-Douglas debates and some other statements. I focused in particular on the one from the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
I think I know what you're talking about. Why don't you share?
So I began the blog by basically with this statement that Lincoln made. This was actually from the first debate, the one at Ottawa. And he said, "I have no purpose to introduce political and social equality between the white and the black races. There is a physical difference between the two, which in my judgment will probably forever forbid their living together upon the footing of perfect equality. And inasmuch as it becomes a necessity that there must be a difference, I, as well as Judge Douglas, am in favor of the race to which I belong having the superior position. I have never said anything to the contrary."
Yeah.
And so this statement, and Lincoln later repeated it and later defended it. So the question is, does this statement make Lincoln a white supremacist? And then I went on, I basically wanted to look at the statement itself and its context, and as well, just looking at how it fits in with the entire body of Lincoln's speeches and writings. And in essence, the statement itself, to prefer that one race hold a superior position in society isn't quite the same as saying that that race is superior, and would seem to me to fall a little bit short of what's usually meant today by white supremacy. And we'll see later that when Lincoln actually had the opportunity to compare the races, he would speak much more tentatively on that.
Mm-hmm.
But the context is very important. We need to remember Lincoln was attempting to unseat Senator Douglas as one of Illinois' two senators in Congress. He was the candidate of the fairly new Republican Party, which, as I already mentioned, was a very diverse group of people whose unifying cause was their opposition to the spread of slavery into the West and the North. And some of the Republicans were abolitionists, advocating for the immediate emancipation of slaves, no compensation paid to the owners, etc., while Lincoln and many others were more in favor of a gradual, voluntary process, compensated emancipation. And so Douglas and the Democrats had resorted to what we today would call race baiting. They kept referring to the Republican Party as the Black Republican Party. They were making the case that this new party was in favor not only of immediate emancipation, but also of amalgamation, that is, a mixing of the races, even intermarriage.
Yeah, they used, they will be able to marry our sisters and our daughters.
Essentially. And so the statement we read from Lincoln was actually in response to some fairly provocative words by Douglas. Douglas had earlier in the same debate at Ottawa, Douglas spoke first, you need to remember, he had said the following. He said, do you desire to allow the free Negroes to flow in and cover your prairies with black settlements? Do you desire to turn this beautiful state into a free Negro colony in order that when Missouri abolishes slavery, she can send 100,000 emancipated slaves into Illinois to become citizens and voters on an equality with yourselves? If you desire Negro citizenship, if you desire to allow them to come into the state and settle with a white man, if you desire them to vote on an equality with yourselves and to make them eligible to office and to serve in juries and to adjudge your rights, then support Mr. Lincoln and the Black Republican Party. And similar sorts of statements.
Right. And the abolitionists were obviously not the majority.
No, certainly
thought,
not.
The abolitionist ideology was
not. The state, they were fairly strong, but not in the central part, or certainly not in the southern part of Illinois.
Right, right. It's an aspect of our American history and the Civil War that escapes. As a matter of fact, the book that I wrote, and I'm sure I shared it with you somewhere along the line, the title that my publisher came up with, which I really like, is called The Ashes That Still Remain. However, my original working title was to be From Moderate to Radical.
Well,
you know, that Abraham Lincoln wanted to be a moderate, but then becoming an abolitionist was the radical position of the day. And so that he became the author of the Emancipation Proclamation made him a radical, but that he didn't want that. He couldn't start that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, although I do like the title that my wonderful publisher, Jim Gilboy, some people might know Jim Gilboy from the Chicago area. Wonderful, great guy. Just passed away this past summer. So lots of prayers for he and his wife and his wonderful children. But he came up with that little title. And The Ashes That Still Remain, that, like when you think of a fire,
mm-hmm.
And okay, the fire's out. Let's leave. No, there's some sparks under here. And Tony, you've probably been camping once or twice. What's
once or
wrong
twice.
With a fire that's has sparks still in it?
It could still ignite.
It'll ignite again. And I have to make this connection. So when we come back, we're going to take a quick little break here. But this is where I want to make my connection, and I want to lead us into a murder mystery episode of The Winds of Change. Anyways, I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to the listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Hurricane Harvey has wreaked unprecedented devastation in Texas. You can help by offering your prayers and material support. Visit CatholicCharities.org. That's CatholicCharities.org. And click on Disaster Operations to make your secure donation. Thank you.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Every first Friday, Jeff Hammond sits in to host Winds of Change to talk about the First Friday devotion. Jeff is the section representative of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Jeff will share the history, tradition, and prayers of the First Friday devotion. First Fridays at noon on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Hopefully we're running along smoothly. Dear Abraham Lincoln, we have on the phone the most accurate portrayal of Abraham Lincoln that I've come across in a long time. Kevin Woods is my guest, and we're talking about the contemporary issues, the riots in Charlottesville, and I want to bring out some other contemporary issues. And before we get back into philosophy, theology, and morality and all these good things, why don't you tell some of the audience of where you've been and what your, I'll call it a ministry, if it's not a, just a part-time job, but some of the things you've told children, or what are some of the experiences you've had that you find interesting?
Yes, I use the word ministry. It's a job, but it's also a ministry. And as I said before, I speak in lots of different venues. I speak to all ages, from the very young to the very old. I do programs in senior residences, for example, and I do programs in first grade. I also do, well, I've had rather interesting opportunities. One of my most recent appearances was actually on August 21st, which we will all recall, I believe, as Eclipse Day.
Oh.
And I happened to have been driving back home from Texas. I dropped my daughter off at, she was beginning graduate school in Texas, and just happened to be driving through Missouri on August 21st.
So how about that?
I had contacted the people at Jefferson Barracks Park in St. Louis, which was one of the sites, the viewing sites. It's a location that has a Civil War history. So I said to them, well, how about Abraham Lincoln comes to watch the eclipse? And they thought that was a great idea, so I got to do that. That's cool. I got a little radio interview, well, a TV interview, actually, with Fox News down there. They wanted to know if I'd ever seen an eclipse before, and I could answer truthfully that, there had been a total solar eclipse in 1834, but it was in the southern part of the country, and I didn't make the trip down to see it, so I was very thankful to have this second opportunity to see an eclipse.
Very good. Very good.
But I do consider that, that was certainly not much of a ministry, but when I do a program in a school, library, etc., my take-home point is pretty much always the same thing. It's what we refer to as the golden rule. That is to love thy neighbor as thyself, to treat other people as you would wish to be treated, of course, as we find in Matthew 22 and the other Gospels. And that's because that's what we as a nation did not do. We as a nation, this great nation dedicated to these great ideas like liberty and equality, and yet we had allowed the institution of human slavery in this country. And so as Lincoln said in his second inaugural address, the Civil War, in his view, was actually a punishment by God on this nation for the offense of slavery on both the North and the South. And so that's why I say, that's an important lesson for us to remember from history.
And I want to say, too, to the people who may be so vicious, have really vicious thoughts about anybody who is from the South that is offended by the attack on especially Robert E. Lee or other Confederate soldier statues, that the people today of the South really, 99.999% of the people learn that lesson pretty well. In other words, they're all abolitionists now. and that is not insignificant. You know, we can grow and we can learn from our mistakes, and I do believe we have in that regard. I'm gonna throw something at you, Kevin. I don't know that you did this, but something to consider. I begin my book with a meditation that I found that was written by that guy named Anonymous.
He's written a lot of things.
I since came to know who wrote it, since I put this little book together. And it's called Lincoln's Right to Life Address. And I'd like to share parts of it, because it's actually a two-page thing that was written down as a meditation. So this is a modern person imagining what Abraham Lincoln would say from heaven about our world today. Hence the introduction to the theme of my book, where these ashes are still remaining, the sparks are still alive. where he says, I remember, he meaning Abraham Lincoln, I remember only too well the debates we had before and during the war. There were so many false arguments on both sides. Judge Douglas had a great number of them, as many of you do today. Much debate revolved around the Dred Scott decision of 1857. 7-2, the Supreme Court had voted that Negroes are not persons. Now you debate the Roe decision of 1973, in which again, by 7-2, the Supreme Court had voted that the preborn are not children, are not persons. By these laws, you can do with the Negroes and the preborn whatever you please, but unjust laws are no laws at all, as Supreme Court Justice Byron White has so well said. They are but exercises in raw judicial power. If not to raw and blind judicial power, then whither must we turn for justice in the cause of both the Negro and the preborn? I believe we must turn to that sheet anchor of our way of life, the Declaration of Independence. There we find a God-given and inalienable right to liberty for the Negro, and a God-given and inalienable right to life for the preborn. I used to argue that the heart of the matter was whether the Negro was a man, for if he was, the American proposition is that all men are created equal, and so the Negro must be free. But science now shows beyond any honest doubt that a new human being begins life at conception, and being equal to all others, has an equal right to life. This remains true regardless of gender or race or genetic defect, the age or marital status or career of the mother, or the cruel violence or gross immorality of the father. So it is also when the preborn become the newborn, or the aged or infirmed. They are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these is the sacred right to life. From this flows our profound conviction as a people of the sanctity of human life, from the moment of conception until the moment of natural death. If America is to endure, we must dedicate ourselves again to the realization of this conviction in private and public life, in all our institutions, and in all our laws. Signed, Abraham Lincoln, right from the pearly gates. So does that blow your socks off a little bit, Mr. Lincoln?
Well, it's a very interesting comparison, and I think it's quite accurate, in my own personal opinion.
Yeah, and I could relate it to the issues and the rhetoric surrounding the Charlottesville riots. You could see how there's, in one sense, you could say, as I said earlier before the break, I think, you know, that the South, no one in the South is advocating slavery anymore, but they're defend. What are the Southerners fighting for? they're fighting because their ancestors fought for their nation, or they wanted a new nation. they were willing, in their mind, they're honoring the medal of a person's character to be willing to die for one's homeland. And that's connected, if you were 100 years ago, to the defense of slavery. Today it's not. And those who can't see the difference are trying to bait. They're trying to portray their enemy in a way that can be easily knocked down, but they have to change their enemy because their enemy is not the enemy that's defending slavery. Their enemies are people that are defending something they don't like. And if you examine and analyze the something that they don't like, I maintain, and you have to open your eyes to see that that something today is, shall we say, the conservative twist to the right to life or the right to an abortion. That is sort of the sacred cow of today. That's my little shtick. Tony and or Kevin, comments, questions, thoughts?
Kevin, my brain is wrinkled.
I'll leave this one to Tony if you'd like to take it.
It does wrinkle your brain. It should wrinkle your brain.
It's something to think of.
Yeah. Let me help you wrinkle your brain a little bit more.
See, this is what we do here.
Here's what I meant before the break when I said I want to continue this discussion and develop a kind of Sherlock Holmes murder mystery.
Wow.
Here we go.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That was me. Sorry.
We have to have wrinkled brains. We all know that a good Sherlock Holmes or John Brown, Father Brown.
Danger, Will Robinson. Yeah. Danger, no, Will Robinson. Danger.
This took time for him to get in here.
That's right. There's always danger in bad ideas.
Yes.
Bad ideologies, as it were. And the Sherlock Holmes or Father John Brown mysteries, I like those. Who doesn't like a good mystery, right?
Mysteries are good.
Yeah. I want to plug, I've been watching the Father Brown murder mysteries on Netflix. I'll put in a free plug for Netflix because they have the series of Father Brown murder mysteries. And there's always, like Sherlock Holmes, whodunit. And then to make the story interesting, there's always the one you think did it, didn't do it.
Exactly. The twist.
The twist. Exactly. Right. If you wrote a story and it was the obvious person who did it, it wouldn't be that. The better murder mysteries always have a lot of case of false, misleading interpretations, or the case of false identity. Here's what I want to say. I'm going to read, I think this is what's happening in conjunction with the wisdom, the ideology of Abraham Lincoln, the confused ideology and the false arguments that are surfacing surrounding the Charlottesville riots, as it were. The National Abortion Rights Action League, otherwise known as NARAL, is one of the prime promoters of abortion rights. And what they're trying to do is pin the Nazi mud on pro-lifers.
Wow.
Here's what was posted on the NARAL website after Charlottesville. They said, "White supremacists at Charlottesville have close ties not just to Trump, but the GOP and the anti-choice groups." Obviously pro-life. And so he's saying that look at the ugliness down there in North Carolina or Virginia and see pro-lifers.
Wow.
And as a pro-lifer myself, I'm thinking, you dirty rat. There's nothing in my heart as a pro-lifer that has 1 ounce of white supremacy mm-hmm. in it. And that is, you know, so there's an attempt to pin the rap on me mm-hmm. and my friends, assuming that my friends are pro-lifers. if you see what I'm saying. And so what I need to point out, and Kevin, I think Abraham Lincoln, if he were alive today, would be right at my right side, and he would be providing even better eloquence to the fumbling way that I sometimes try to express myself. But he would be saying, too, that the white supremacy of today is filled with a kind of hatred that comes from Nazism, not pro-lifeism. And even Abraham Lincoln wouldn't even know what Nazism that came after 1864, right? Weren't you shot in 1864?
Well, actually, 1865.
Oh, 65. Oh, my goodness. I made a boo-boo there. I should put myself in the punishment room, but I won't do that, right?
I was reelected, don't you forget.
That's right. April 4th. I do remember it was April 4th, correct?
No, actually...
Hey, you go into the punishment room.
Yeah, I'd actually never talk about the assassination when I'm in character. I refer to the last day I recall being alive, which was April the 14th, which was Good Friday.
There's a 4 in it.
Good Friday.
It was Good Friday, April 14th. I was off by 10.
That's
pretty
good.
Those were 10 very important days.
I was thinking of the French Revolution, which recreated the calendar and left off a number of...
Good save.
Yeah, I see. There we go. Okay. But anyways... the theme of the show to be Chris. I want to see how manipulative, shall we say, the progressive secular leftist kind of ideology is. They're trying to associate two groups that are completely not associated, and actually. I want to pin the rap. If we're going to associate the Nazi spirit or the white supremacist spirit with anything that's going on today, I want to pin it on the pro-abortion crowd, because the pro-abortion crowd is most tied to the eugenics crowd, the birth control crowd, and therefore the abortion crowd. Here's something that Richard Spencer, don't know if that name means much. I hope it doesn't take on a life of its own, but Richard Spencer was the white supremacist that was giving some of the talks in Charlottesville. And if you listen and analyze the ideology and the philosophy of Richard Spencer, you'll see that he's much more aligned with NARAL than any pro-life defender. Because he says the people who are for birth control on the one hand, because he's quoting Margaret Sanger, they help to rid the country of the undesirables. That was one of the main thoughts of eugenicism. Mm-hmm. Pass out, get the undesirables to use birth control and let only the supreme race populate or reproduce. Then you're going to recreate the best society. So Richard Spencer, the keynote speaker in Charlottesville, and the central figure of the alt-right movement, finds abortion useful. I'm reading from a National Review article here, it's quite informative. He says, he, meaning Richard Spencer, has explained that abortion will help to bring about his vision of an elite white America. The people who are having abortions are generally very often, this is a quote from Richard Spencer, the people who are having abortions are generally very often black or Hispanic or from very poor circumstances, end of quote. The people whom Spencer wants to reproduce, he says, are, quote, are using abortion when you have a situation like Down syndrome. It is only the unintelligent, the black and the Hispanic, he claims, who use abortion as birth control. Spencer has specifically contrasted his position on abortion with that of National Review's Ramesh Panuru. Spencer mocks Panuru as undertaking a human rights crusade built on the assumption that every being that is human has a right to life. Spencer, of course, doesn't believe that is true. To me, those are powerful proofs of what I'm saying is that if we put ourselves in a Sherlock Holmes murder mystery and the alt-left is trying to pin me, a conservative pro-lifer, with this Nazi badge or the white supremacist badge, I'm protesting and saying, it's not me. You're looking at, you got the wrong guy.
You got the wrong guy.
Just like in a murder mystery. And so often the case, a good murder mystery, it all looks like it's the guy. It's, you know, he's going to jail. He's going down for sure. And the bad cop has got the wrong guy. But then, boom, springs the real guy. Let's take another quick break. Kevin, can you stay on with us a little bit more? Our show is an hour, and it goes by so fast. But are you able to stay with us a little bit longer? Yeah. Okay. Well, let's take another break. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the divine mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon, beginning September 9th, will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing on first Saturday afternoon starting at 4:30, beginning September 9th. Find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Every first Friday, Jeff Hammond sits in to host Winds of Change to talk about the First Friday devotion. Jeff is the section representative of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre for the Archdiocese of Chicago. Jeff will share the history, tradition, and prayers of the First Friday devotion. First Fridays at noon on Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for being with us. I'm Father Tom Coyes. We're talking about Charlottesville. We're talking about white supremacists. We're talking about Abraham Lincoln. We're talking with Abraham Lincoln. We have a special connection. That, you know, Tony, that may be why there's a little bit of challenge with our technical difficulties. Nick, you don't have to sweat. People know that connecting with Abraham Lincoln in the hereafter
is never easy.
Is not easy, and there may be some challenges technically, but that's to say, my guest is Kevin Woods, who's a man who I've met for a number of years now and done a little bit of work with, who's a Abraham Lincoln portrayer. And I'm bringing up issues that the Civil War bring about. I said to some of my friends the other day, and actually I said in my sermon, I wrote my book, The Ashes That Still Remains, 25 years too early.
Wow.
If this book came out now, because, see, the riots in Charlottesville are trying to say that the Civil War still lives, or the Confederacy still lives. Isn't that basically what they're trying to say? And I'm saying there is a sense that an ideology that animated the Civil War still lives. But you're not going to find it in the more conservative Christian Southern folk. The ideology that fomented and pushed the Civil War is found more in the secular leftist kind of mentality. That's why one of the things when the past president, Barack Obama, was running and people were saying he's a reincarnation of Abraham Lincoln, it hurt me to the core. Because Barack Obama, by being a tremendous defender of abortion rights, would not have been the ideology of Abraham Lincoln. Kevin, if you're there, I hope we can still hear you. Can you hear me now still?
Yes, I'm
done. Okay. Let me throw this at you, because it has been thrown at me, and I've reacted, but I'm interested in
throwing it at someone else.
Throwing it at someone else to get some reaction from the horse's mouth, as it were. You, as Abraham Lincoln, do you think the previous president, President Obama, was a good example of a reincarnation of Abraham Lincoln?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Yes. Well, I know it is.
I would say certainly certain aspects of Barack Obama were very much in line with Abraham Lincoln, and but others, as you've just pointed out, perhaps I would say would not so. I personally am just a little cautious on saying anything too definitively when it comes to
political issues,
on modern issues and even modern people, because context is so important, and it's very hard to know, you know, what kind of person would Abraham Lincoln have been if he lived a different time. We certainly know his character would essentially have been the same.
Yeah.
But how would he have responded to the particular issues of his time? That's very difficult to judge, and probably for that reason, over the 150-plus years that he's been gone, so many groups have in essence, claimed him, groups that hold entirely contradictory positions. Have claimed them each as for their own. I'm just naturally a bit cautious on.
Well, fair enough.
Safe answer.
I completely understand. I'll just say this. You can leave this to the experts like me. Step aside while I step in the void, because what I'm saying is something that is so controversial that it could make you a martyr.
That it could.
That's what I'm saying. And if there's anything that's, I do think Lincoln's assassination was connected to his strong defense of the human person, the black man as a human being, as a citizen.
Well, certainly there's evidence that, it's believed that John Wilkes Booth was present at Lincoln's last speech, what turned out to be his last speech,
right,
given April 11th, where, among other things, he advocated giving the right to vote to those black soldiers who had fought in the Civil War, also to those who were educated and so on. And he didn't go much further in talking about that because it wasn't a very popular subject to talk about, but it is believed that Booth heard those words and basically equated that
he said this will be his last speech.
That's essentially the same as giving blacks citizenship, and he was very much opposed to that, and so he decided on that spot that he would kill Lincoln,
right.
Which he, of course, did 3 days later.
Right. And my position that I want my listeners to contemplate is that those who are willing to hold on to the defense of the unborn have to be willing to take a hit, whether it's politically, whether it's popularity, job-wise, as it were. People are losing their jobs because they take the little bit conservative position that marriage is to be defined as between a man and a woman. There's been so many people that have been censured because they're not going along with this new sense of morality. And a new sense of morality is not a new sense of morality. It's a retread of an old sense of morality, which is based on the loss of the inherent dignity of every human being. You can define who you want to be defended, and you could exempt or leave out those you don't want to be defended. And so, as I say, this is a kind. It's a form of political martyrdom for many. I was talking to. I often see Congressman Dan Lipinski. Many people in this Chicagoland area know he's a wonderful Catholic guy. He's very pro-life. He's, when you see a vote in Congress in the last 10 or 12 years, and there's one Democrat vote for the pro-life position, you could pretty much bet that it was Dan Lipinski's vote. We've talked a little bit, and I sometimes will say, why don't you join the party that's more established as the pro-life party? So, well, that would be political suicide for him. If he ran, I said, why don't you run as a Republican sometimes? He would say,
wouldn't happen.
It couldn't
happen.
It would be political suicide.
Yep.
So this is what I'm saying. To the ashes that still remain. By the way, anybody who wants to get a copy of that great book by Father Tom Coyes, The Ashes That Still Remain.
Finally.
I forgot to do that. Tony, you should have done it.
I'm just hoping you have stock, because when the orders start coming in,
the phones are going to be ringing off the
hook.
Well, the best way to do it is send an email to unlikeothernations@gmail.com. That's my unlikeothernations@gmail.com. You can also call the office, my St. James Rectory, 630-257-7000. As I say, I think I wrote this book 25 years
too early,
because this false identification that I'm seeing, that this white supremacist alt-right movement is, it's filled, these pro-lifers are part of it. And I want to say, no, we're not. It's the white supremacists are kindred spirits to the modern-day Nazis, and the modern-day Nazis are part of the Margaret Sanger movement. The Margaret Sanger movement, the American Birth Control League and all that, is part of the abortion movement. And therefore, the alt-left, for whom abortion is the eighth sacrament, are if you took that plank out of the liberal ideology, what would you have? I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to imagine it. Let me throw another quote here from this very interesting article, which points out some of Richard Spencer, the keynote white supremacist's ideology. He says he openly mocks conservatives who worry about a black genocide. Who's a good example of a conservative who worries about black genocide? The niece of Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. who's a great pro-lifer and became Catholic, even after much thought and contemplation. She often says abortion is destroying the black communities. So he knows that an estimated 75% of women who have abortions are poor. He knows that black women receiving an outsized 36% of all American abortions are almost five times as likely to terminate their pregnancies as white women. Nothing could make him happier. Also secure in that knowledge is the alt-right person, Ms. Fisher, who writes for Spencer's journal called The Radix. She says, quote, it is important that we not fall prey to the pro-life temptation. Her reasoning is predictable. The only ones who can't avoid an unwanted pregnancy are the least intelligent and most irresponsible members of society. Women who are disproportionately Black, Hispanic, and poor. Wow. Ouch. I hope, to me, that is like running your fingernails against a blackboard these days. I don't know if you could even use that analogy because kids don't even know what blackboards are.
Yeah.
But rubbing, it stands the hair on the back of my head up because it's so contrary to my pro-life sense that is built on the innate dignity of every person, no matter what race or economic status. But again, this attempt to pin the crime on the wrong person, I feel as a pro-lifer, I feel the need to scream out and say, it's not me.
It's not me.
The detective is going in the wrong direction. So, hey, let's, with a little bit of the time left here, Kevin, let me throw another Abraham Lincoln quote at you that I use in my book, and you may not remember it, but this was when he was frustrated at some of the arguments about the pro-slavery issue. And he says this at one point, all the powers of, he's feeling sorry for the Black man. He's feeling sorry for the slave. Where he says, all the powers of earth seem rapidly combining against him. They have him in his prison house. They have searched his person and left no prying instrument with him. One after another, they have closed the heavy iron doors upon him. And now they have, as it were, bolted in with a lock of 100 keys, which can never be unlocked without the concurrence of every key. The keys in the hands of 100 different men, and they are scattered to 100 different distant places, and they stand musing as to what invention in all the dominions of mind and matter can be produced to make the impossibility of his escape more complete than it is. I love that. He's saying how incredibly impossible it is for the Black man to escape his lot. He's locked in.
Yeah, that's,
do you remember that quote,
Kevin? That's from a speech given in Springfield, Illinois, summer of 57. This was shortly after the Dred Scott decision. And so just Lincoln thinking about all that was stacked against the Black man, in particular the slave, to be freed from his condition.
Right, right. And you could see his angst. You could see how frustrated he was. And in a sense, the seeds of his future abolitionist actions. Even though at the beginning he was a politician, of course, and I still maintain that political life is noble. And, oh dear, that music means we're at the end of our hour.
Give your blog. What is your blog?
Kevin, yeah, what's your blog? Or how can people get in touch with you? We'll get you next week. God bless you, everyone. You've been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the no time.